I have another interview for you today, this time with the co-hosts of The Power Couple, Roman and Bodana. We're talking about circadian rhythms, quantum biology, technology addiction, and a week-long digital detox coming up.
EMF Remedy is dedicated to helping you understand which electromagnetic threats are present in your home, and whether in the context of your current home, one you're considering for purchase, or building a new home with comprehensive protection designed in, EMF Remedy can help you reduce your family's exposure to harmful, man-made electromagnetic radiation.
Hi, this is Keith Cutter with EMFRemedy.com, host of the EMF Remedy podcast. This is a place where we help you deal with the fact that we're living in an upside-down world where personal radiation exposure has become the norm, and you're considered strange if you don't want to expose yourself or your loved ones to a continuous sea of harmful man-made electromagnetic radiation. Can you imagine if you could go back in time 50 years and tell people that this would be the state of affairs in the world where personal radiation exposure was normal? Nobody questioned it. In fact, if you did have the audacity to question personal radiation exposure, you would be called a tinfoil nutcase. Anyway. All right, so let's reduce the fear. Let's replace it with knowledge and a plan. We're going to continue on that journey, and today I've got some help. I had a delightful interview with a couple I would like you to meet. This is Roman and Bodana. They are the co-hosts of a podcast called The Power Couple, and they have They do a nice topical coverage of a variety of different topics of interest in the health and wellness space. We've got a broad-ranging conversation coming up that I know you're going to enjoy. We talk about circadian rhythms and quantum biology. We talk about tech addiction, particularly with children, and we're going to get a description of something they did recently. They got away for a week with a digital detox. So without further ado, I'd like to share with you my interview with the Power Couple. Here we go. My guests today are Roman and Bodana. They're the co-hosts of the Power Couple podcast. Welcome to the EMF Remedy podcast.
Hi, Keith. Such a pleasure to be here.
Hi, Keith. Thank you so much for having us.
I am so happy to have you guys doing this. Roman, I think we probably each rescheduled this at least once, but we stuck in there, didn't we?
We did.
And for those people in my audience who are not familiar with your work, I would recommend you get in touch with it. They have a lovely podcast and quite a bit of work on their Substack as well. And for people who have been following me for some time, this is a bit of a departure because I have been day after day, episode after episode, all about the technical aspects of surviving electromagnetic poisoning through a proper and accurate assessment followed by remediation, measurable remediation techniques that result in a reduction of personal exposure to non-native or harmful man-made EMF. We're going to talk about a couple of other things today. We're going to talk about the neuroscience of child tech addiction. We're going to talk about a digital detox that you folks just recently took part in. And we're going to talk about depression, anxiety, and insomnia, and what those things have to do, and what healing is possible from quantum biology. So don't worry, folks, we're going to return in the next episode to the more technical aspects of EMF and dealing with that in your homes and in your lives. But I just think these topics are so important for surviving electromagnetic poisoning. All of this is related, and we'll talk about why as we get going. But with that context in mind, we're trying to replace the illegitimate forms, the man-made forms of radiation, with the legitimate forms, those that were created by God in the beginning. So with that as a little bit of an introduction, guys, let's talk about quantum biology.
Yeah, so thanks for asking, Keith. Quantum biology really started to fascinate me actually when I started following the work of Jack Kruse back in 2017. And, you know, I loved biology class in high school, but for some reason, I became interested in psychology, and things kind of went from there. But when I found out how our biology can affect our psychology, and how quantum biology is all about the intersection of biology and physics, that really led me down a rabbit hole of healing. Because as you may or may not know, Western medicine, you know, we're trained in biology, what a cell does, what the nucleus is, but most doctors aren't trained in physics. And physics is a law of nature, of God, and it pervades us everywhere. So for instance, our mitochondria, they spin at a certain frequency at around 100 hertz. That's the cycles per second that infrared light allows mitochondria to spin. Or I'm sorry, our ATP, which is adenosine triphosphate. That's our energy molecule. But if they don't have that proper spin rate, then we don't get the energy we need. And how is that spin rate affected? Well, it's affected by light, by the electricity of the sun, of the infrared wavelength. And these are things that fascinated me for two reasons. Number one, I was never taught about spin rates of ATP in biology. And the second reason was that my wife and my family, they were going through some health issues. Even as a teen, when my mother and grandparents, they passed away from cancer, doctors would never give me the right answers, and often was met with an arrogant attitude. And this made me question things as a young child. And that's one of the reasons why I am fascinated with quantum, which means it's not linear. It has profound downstream effects of seeing that light will create energy and abundance for us the rest of the day. And that's why we're huge into seeing the sunrise, because it has all those profound downstream benefits, which we can talk about later. But I'm just so passionate about it, Keith. I can probably talk for the next hour about it. But yeah, thank you for the question.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we're talking about is going to sound deceptively simple, but please consider that the lives we lead right now, living in these boxes we call houses and apartments and whatnot, this is not how our ancestors lived. And our time in front of screens that emit these strange colors at all times of the day and night, this has not been a part of the human experience for the last 150 years. We're spending more and more time indoors, and you can't achieve natural lighting indoors. So all of this is just couldn't be more important to our physiology, facing the sun when it's rising. How simple is that? Maybe I might add, with your bare feet on the ground, which won't work here for me about 6 months of the year, but once the ice is gone, perhaps in the rest of the summer. So yeah, let's talk about Bonanna. You had a health journey that really involved those three things that I mentioned earlier. And I hope you don't mind if I'm just very open about this, the depression, the anxiety, and the insomnia. And so many people with electromagnetic poisoning display those same things. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your journey?
Absolutely. I'm very happy to share this. I'll confess, when I was going through all this, oh, there was shame, guilt. I didn't want anybody knowing, because I felt out of control. But it was one of those experiences in life that either breaks you or makes you. And gratefully, it was something that was truly a gift, because it opened my eyes to a better way of living, for one thing, both physically, on the emotional and psychological and spiritual levels as well. But to connect to what we're talking about here today, and to give a little bit of the backstory, I was, I believe, about 19 or 20 when I was diagnosed with depression and by my family doctor. And she told me, well, it's most likely hereditary and it is going to be a major killer in the future. And here's your prescription for SSRIs, and away you go. And so I believe that genetic determinism story, that I am my genes, and for 15 years. But surprise, surprise, those pills didn't help. The chemical imbalance that I was told that I have most likely came from those pills, not from any condition, mental condition. And this is, of course, what I learned along this health journey, which really came to a pinnacle when Roman and I were on our honeymoon 8 years ago, and I just literally fell apart. I shut down. I didn't want to do anything other than just sit on the couch. I could watch TV and try and numb everything that was going on in my brain. And so it's a big, long story, and there's a lot of people who are going through that. And there's other layers to it as well, I would say. And we don't have to get into that today, but one of the things, and this is how Roman mentioned when he, we were still going the allopathic route. I was medicated again, because I tried getting off and was put on meds again. And I just felt like a zombie. And it was my rock bottom. And gratefully, this wonderful husband who in sickness and in health stood by me. And he said, no, there's got to be different ways. There's got to be something else. And that's where he started looking into alternatives. And that's where Dr. Jack Cruz and his work came to light, no pun intended. And we started making some major changes, connecting to nutrition and movement. And as you mentioned, I was having major insomnia, because that depression and anxiety, it creates this unholy trinity, with the insomnia. It's just this
feedback loop. Yeah.
And you feel like you're just drowning in it. So one of the things though that, and I dragged my feet on this, but Roman said, we need to get you outside. We need to start getting you in the sun. And I thought, this is ridiculous. You know, I feel like total crap, sorry to say, but, and it's the worst point in my life. And he's telling me I need to get out into the sun. But we started step by step going on those walks. And as simple as that sounds, that was the turning point for me, where now, of course, when, you know, several years down the road in the journey and researching and understanding and coming out on the other side, you know, it makes sense to me. And just recently, I kind of dove into it a little further, in that trying to connect the dots for when this really started for me. And you had mentioned our indoor culture. You know, I had been very active throughout high school, outside, summer camps, all that kind of stuff. University hits, I'm indoors, you know, nose to the books. You're also out with friends late, you're studying, cramming. I've got very much sucked into that indoor culture. And then from there, working out indoors, and I was working indoors. So all of that vanished. And like what you said, Keith, before, is that if we look at it, and our ancestors, they never lived that way. Never, ever, ever. So how can we expect to live, quote unquote, normally, when we've now put ourselves into artificial light, into, you know, not being exposed to those healthy EMFs we get from the sun. And then on top of that, introducing these alien EMFs that are so harmful, invisible, but so harmful. So in a bit of a long nutshell there, that was the experience. And in terms of the insomnia, you know, we can touch on that a bit more later if you'd like. But part of this healing journey was creating an entire evening and bedtime routine, which was in direct correlation with the movements of the sun and mimicking how our ancestors lived. And we continue to do that to this day. I cherish the sleep that I have now. So it's very fascinating how much we're impacted, how much our brain, our bodies, it's all interconnected.
I really appreciate the depth of your willingness to share this journey that you had. Depression, anxiety, insomnia. These are not trivial things. And you mentioned that you were being prescribed medications for these things. Mm-hmm. And we all know that every medication has side effects.
Yeah.
And then the more you take, you've got this idea of polypharmacy and the pharmacokinetics and how they might interfere or enhance or diminish the effects of each of the others. This is no joke. Mm-hmm. Why, Bodhana, why did you do what these people were telling you to do? These people in the white coats, why did you do it?
Well, part of it is because I grew up in a family with allopathic medicine. So that was my, you know, base, really. You know, I didn't know anything else. I trusted that. And so when I was, you know, at 19, you're told, well, this is what it's all about. So, oh, okay, well, then you must be right, because you've gone to school for this. You know, the funny thing, I laugh now, because one of the last times that I had seen my family doctor, I had mentioned epigenetics to her, and she says, oh, what's that? And I thought, okay, well, there we go. You know, and I try not to have ill will, and it's difficult sometimes, because there is still some anger associated with that. You know, you're put on something 15 years. I was told, you know, if you feel worse, then just take more. You know, that there's lack of knowledge, but at no point was I asked, you know, what's your sleep like? What stress are you under? How are you eating? None of that, because it's not taught, and we know that for a fact. So you know, now hindsight is 20/20, of course, but I think, like many of us, why do we believe it? Is because we're told that they're the experts. And
yeah, if I can just interject too, I think why you acted the way you did, a lot of it was fear too, because everybody's saying, oh, if you don't do this, you know, you're going to have a heart attack, or you're going to die, or you're going to commit suicide. When in fact, these pills, when I read the inserts, which your psychiatrist didn't even read, suicide, you shouldn't take it, is a risk if you take it for over 180 days. For
the sleeping pills.
But, but anyway, I think it was just, it wasn't easy, because when I was recommending all those alternative approaches, I got a lot of pushback from you and, you know, people and family, you know, that I'm the crazy hippie guy trying to come up with, oh, sunlight. How dare you introduce sunlight? She can't even, you know, how is she going to tolerate going outside? It's too much for her, like dragging you. But it was worth it, because, you know, just let nature and God do the work for us. Right. There's so many tools already at our disposal. But anyway, I think that was a big thing, was the fear. And not wanting to step out of line, when you already have that health issue and your mind isn't working, you introduce fear on top of that.
Yeah,
it creates a cocktail that is very hard to beat.
Yeah, that's great insight. Yeah.
And it began that simply, right? You had been on this path before of being told that there was something wrong with you. The problem was with you. And that these pills were the cure or the fix or the treatment for that. And you followed that course of action because of, I'm just going to say, programming. I mean, this is the way we're taught and we're brought up, and it's what's considered normal. But over time, it didn't work. And you managed to survive. Until right on your honeymoon was the time that things began to unravel in a dramatic way. And then your husband made a very simple suggestion. Let's go for walks, right?
Yep.
So that simple, getting outside, getting sun. And Roman, take it from here and kind of explain from your perspective what you saw changing in your wife as you were proposing these radical concepts of getting some movement and some proper light exposure.
Well, you know, I saw changes immediately and also saw changes down the road. But every time we went for those walks, you know, even if you don't want to go outside, you know, on those snowy days, both of us would be like, well, don't really feel like it. Right. But then after the end of it, we're like, oh, we're so happy we did that. And I just saw an overall lightening of her heart, and overall just, well, her sleep got better because she was outside, and my sleep also, being out in the cold during the winter when you're going through that depression, that does help you sleep better, right? Because you think, oh, you're in front of the TV. And that's what happens now with a lot of our culture. With the blue light, and, you know, we're inside and we're in front of the TV all day, and we think we're going to be tired, but we're not expending any energy. But anyway, yeah. So I saw an immediate change in your humor, even and also physically. You know, your skin, your eyes, everything started lighting up a bit. And you were still wearing sunglasses at that point, and then we gradually introduced more modifications. Like, I got rid of my sunglasses intentionally this time, because I would always lose them unintentionally. So and then once that happened, our eyes adjusted. It was hard at first, but and there's a whole science as to why those sunglasses are harmful, which I've written an article about on Substack. But so I've just seen those changes happen incrementally, and now all of a sudden we're different people. You know, in a good way.
What is the problem with sunglasses?
Well, there's lots of problems. The main thing is that, there's a few things. People who, in our society, where everybody's indoors under blue light or looking at screens, we're getting a massive amount of that blue light. There's no red light present. And red light is what regenerates our retina. So when we go outside and we see that sunlight, which has the red light present, Well, that sunlight also has UV, which is very intense, and other wavelengths, which we're not used to anymore. So when we go outside, we think, oh, automatically we need those sunglasses because the sun hurts our eyes. And we're also told that we can go blind. However, most of the experiments on UV, ultraviolet radiation, were done in labs with no red light present. So any harm from UV was just basically assumed to cause harm because that's what UV does. But of course, if it doesn't have red or infrared, which are the regenerative frequencies, it's going to cause harm. So to answer your question, when we cover up our eyes with sunglasses, we are not able to stimulate melanocytes in our body. And melanocytes are what allow us to fight inflammation and cancer. Because when our eyes see ultraviolet radiation, full spectrum ultraviolet radiation from the sun, it stimulates what's called MSH, melanocyte stimulating hormone. And that's actually what helps our skin become more tan and also produce more melanin, which is what, as I said, that's a form of melanocyte that fights cancer. And it's also one of the reasons why if you have sunglasses and you're tanning outside on the beach and the other person doesn't, the person who has the sunglasses is actually much more likely to get a skin burn, because the information that we're getting from the sun, all that light information has to be processed by our eyes and our skin. And our eyes process most of the neurological information around our environment. And when we cut that input source out, now our skin has to take the brunt of it. We're much more likely to get burned. So that's just one of the things that not wearing sunglasses can do, is help make us more depressed because we're not getting that light or stimulation, and also make us more prone to inflammation and cancer because we're not stimulating melanin.
And if I can just add to that again, you know, it's one of those things. What would our ancestors do? Well, they didn't wear sunglasses, you know, they survived. Nobody went blind, you know, and so if we can mimic that, then in our belief, we are living in a healthier way, because again, we have that healthy relationship with the sun, seeing it rise in the morning, it gets us going. And then throughout the day, and then in the evening, also then calming our nervous system as the sun goes down. So what we've done in our modern day, especially since electrification 150 years ago, is throw that completely out of whack, completely.
Our eyes have a purpose beyond seeing things, right? Mm-hmm. They're taking clues from our environment that nobody's born with an understanding of how profound that signal, that information, just associated with the color of the light, the difference between a sunrise and midday and evening. All of these things open up the pharmacy inside of our head and the production of hormones in ways that are so foundational, most people just have no idea. Would you agree with what I'm saying?
100%.
100%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of my best friends, I never forget it. He said, Roman, why do you do what you do? Like, if I was to sign up with you, do I really need somebody to tell me to go outside and see the sun? And, you know, I asked him later on, I said, well, do you? He said, oh, yeah, thanks for reminding me. So, you know, it's such a basic thing, but we take it for granted. Like, you know, yesterday working outside, I had my shirt off. I went in the cold water. You know, but how many people take their shirt off in 50 degree weather, 40 degree weather, just to get sun exposure? You think you're crazy, but this is what our ancestors did. And I get so much power from that light source that it's just, and you don't have to do it that much, you know, that, I mean, ideally all day, but it's just such a basic thing that we've forgotten because we take it for granted, just like everything else, water, breathing, our loved ones. And it's really comes from a place of gratitude, ultimately, for what we do have.
And just to add to that too, again, just like the alien EMFs, our good natural EMFs are invisible, and their impact on us is invisible. So we always say too, and Roman, because at first I'd be like, well, you know, it's cloudy outside when I was dragging my feet and not wanting to go. He says, it doesn't matter. The sun is still there. We still get the impact of the sun, the healing of the sun. Mm-hmm. So that's something else. Like our analogy is probably anybody's gone out on a summer day when it's cloudy and not worn any protection, let's say midday, right? And I'm not talking about sunscreen protection, I'm like, you know, a shirt or a hat or something. And then you're like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden you've got this sunburn. Why did that happen? Well, the sun's power is still getting through. And so we can't forget that it's ever present and always there for us.
So let's just talk a little bit about blue light and the fact that we've already talked about how we have this signaling in the eye. I have some gray hairs, so I've been around for a little while. When I learned photography, it was all film. And one of the things that I learned early on, if you're shooting color film and you take a picture of a subject at dawn, and then at noon, and then at dusk, you're going to get radically different color temperatures that we don't necessarily perceive with our eyes. We have this sort of automatic white balance thing going in our eyes where we walk into a room and we just think it's white light when it may not be white light. We walk outside and we think it may be white light when it's early in the morning. It's not really. If you develop that potential, you can actually see the colors that are really present in nature, and they mean something. So can you talk about, one of you please talk about how the blue light gives a particular signal that's really appropriate and really helpful to the body, but we have other exposures during the day revolving around the only legal light sources left in North America and screens and whatnot. And then what effect that has in the evening. Could you guys talk about that?
Yeah, no, great question. And, you know, blue light is such a bad guy nowadays, but blue light on its own, it can do a lot of harm. But to boil it down basically for everyone, if you think about the sunrise to sunset and the kind of light that we see throughout the day that we've seen as a species for 200,000 years or more, that light, the first thing in the morning when that sun rises, there's actually massive amounts of blue light in that sunrise. And the sun has more blue light than our phones or tablets and our computer screens or televisions. But what's different about the blue light of the sun is that, again, it's balanced by red, infrared, green, yellow, and ultraviolet. So you're getting a full spectrum, which allows your organism to then process that blue light much more efficiently. And so why does blue light get a bad rap now? Well, blue light, and when it's under that single wavelength, typically around 450 nanometers, which is the length of the wave, when it hits our eye, that can stimulate the production of cortisol and also can spike our dopamine. Now, cortisol is referred to often as a stress hormone, but cortisol can do a lot of good things for us because it can actually alert us, and it's the hormone that helps wake us up. So that's why seeing the sun first thing in the morning is so beneficial, because you're getting blue light that's stimulating you in the right way. Now, what we've done is we've inverted that equation with our modern day. We see that blue light at night, just on our phone, keeping us up, stimulating cortisol, and not seeing it in the morning. And with dopamine, what happens is blue light has also been shown to destroy growth hormone, testosterone, DHEA, all these pro-hormones, pregnenolone, which is a pro-hormone, which means it makes other hormones in our body. Blue light switches that hormonal production to cortisol. Okay, so as I mentioned, cortisol can be good, but it can also be bad. And that's why blue light is especially harmful for children, because we need that growth hormone during childhood. Now, instead, children are getting stressed out, anxious, and the elderly also. A lot of them who have neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, that blue light is just depleting their dopamine more and just spiking it more and more. And why is that bad? Well, dopamine is a reward chemical, so it makes us want more of whatever we're doing. Now, to compound that is dopamine is paired with melatonin. So the higher our dopamine is, the lower our melatonin production is. This is why, again, in the morning when we see that blue light, we don't have a lot of melatonin making us sleepy. But at night, again, we've inverted it. So we get a lot of dopamine and we have lower melatonin levels at night, and it makes it harder for us to fall asleep. That's just a couple things, and there's a lot of other things that blue light does, and basically just can destroy our eyes, to put it bluntly. And especially for children, it penetrates 60% deeper into the eyes of 10-year-olds than adults. And then there's all other things like the pulsation, the quality of that wavelength, how it interacts with our skin through that pulsing nature. To just make it simple for people, that's why you need to get outside first thing in the morning and get that blue light.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So I want to pivot here, and I want to talk about tech, and in particular tech and children. So you've published some subtly titled papers like "How Does Big Tech Target Children?" And let's see, what was another one here recently? Liberating Children from the Digital Gulag. And
very subtle.
Yeah, no, and I love it. I mean, I'm laughing because I just, yeah, really appreciate the way you're very direct in your titles. And there is this whole neuroscience of, you know, child tech addiction. And I'm just going to give you the platform. And what do you want to? I'm concerned about the next generation and the generation after that, because the reality that they're being handed and the habits and norms that we're giving them right now are not healthy. And would you guys like to talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, there's a great saying, a Stoic saying, and says the obstacle is the way. And, you know, seeing these devices and what it does to our brains has allowed me to see not only the problem with it, but also how our brain interacts with light and why it's so powerful. Again, with that sun, because the electric magnetic fields of these devices can be used to our detriment or to our benefit. But there's so many things. So when tech addiction is a very popular subject now, it's almost becoming like a virtuous thing to talk about. But most people, when they talk about tech addiction or social media addiction, don't mention the electromagnetic radiation, the wireless radiation, which is the primary assault that is happening. Bodana and I, we just finished watching The Social Dilemma a few months back. And it was a great documentary, but it didn't mention anything about EMF, you know, electromagnetic fields. And that's what made me interested in diving into the tech addictive aspect and what people aren't talking about. So, for instance, transmagnetic cranial stimulation, which is where a magnetic field is applied to the brain, that can basically affect somebody's moral judgments. Okay, like evaluating intentions of another person. So, you know, we all like to think we're consistent in our morality, but the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, they showed that an electromagnetic field applied to our brain via a magnetic device, similar to our phone, impairs our ability to evaluate intentions. So basically, people are asked to judge how permissible it is for a guy to let his girlfriend walk across a bridge. He knows is unsafe, even if she, you know, ends up making it across safely. So the people in the control, they said, well, basically, you know, they were able to evaluate that what was happening was harmful, potentially. But those who had the transmagnetic stimulation applied, they made judgments purely on the outcome. So basically, they said, well, you know, she made it across, so that's all that matters, right? So, you know, you can see it's such a subtle way that these things are kind of invading our consciousness, really. You know, so yeah, I hear you. Hey, I'd rather somebody make it across that bridge, but what if they hadn't, right? And this is what, so this is one thing, and this is by MIT. You can look it up. I have it in the article about the liberating children from the digital gulag. But so that's one way the EMF is affecting us morally. That's, and I think that's the basis of humanity. You know, once you tap into morals, forget about mitochondria and cancer and everything else. Our morals are what make us human. So that's one thing. And the electrical frequencies, they can also change our personality, because even those, there was research done that our temporoparietal junction, which is an area of our brain, when that's activated, we're more prone to have an out-of-body experience. And basically, the subjects in that experiment, they weren't able to determine what they're seeing on that screen, if it was true or false. So it basically makes you, you know, when you have that magnetic field applied to the temporoparietal junction, or that TPJ, what happens is you don't know what's happening around you is real, and you may be behaving like a zombie because you're out of body. That's what I'm garnering from that. So then there's so many things that EMF can do to us. The good news is those same brain waves, when we use them the right way, like the alpha brain waves and the theta brain waves that are prime in the subconscious of children, that can be to our benefit, because that's what allows us to be creative. That's what allows us to tap into our humanity, our morals, our instinct. And that's what is shown when we have that distance from the technology, that we're able to then go back and have that experience. And that's my hope. Of course, you know, that just starts with really having that distance and the boundaries. But again, I can go on. There's so many different things that are happening with this. But yeah, I hope that helps answer your question.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And Bodana, I'm wondering what your thoughts might be with regard to the actual radiation exposure for children that's implicit in tech. You know, for some reason in the schools now, they think you have to have wireless to be on the internet, which is far from true. So you have all this radiation exposure for the purpose of getting online. You have all this blue light exposure, and children are being given cell phones earlier and earlier without really any kind of an introduction other than here, go be distracted by these things. But I would just love to hear what your thoughts are about this whole area of technology addiction and children and the various exposures and any concerns that might raise in your mind.
Well, very blunt, Steven, I'm very, very highly concerned. Children are getting their phones earlier and earlier, and children are being diagnosed with ADHD, anxiety, depression. Suicide rates have gone up incredibly in age groups that this shouldn't even, you know, come across our radar. We're talking 10, 11, 12 year olds. And you may say, well, that's coincidence that, you know, these rates started increasing at the same time that, you know, Facebook came out with its like button, or the iPhone had the ability of doing selfies. You may say it's coincidence, but I'm not willing to take the risk of just putting that aside. And, you know, I have a young niece and nephew, And I am concerned about their future because they're so entrenched in that. Like you said, they're exposed to it every single day in the classroom. But like Jonathan Haidt, who's a social psychologist, explained that childhood has now shifted from play and how we would have experienced it, play outside. We had that interaction, the personal interaction, the community, to the community being online. I mean, kids are sitting across from each other, but communicating through a phone. And that has created in and of itself its own downward spiral. They don't know how to communicate with each other anymore, or outside of that device that they've become so reliant upon. And so that is extremely concerning because we are devolving as humans. You know, we're saying, oh, well, this is progress. Is it really? Mm-hmm. when we can't even function at a basic level of interacting as humans. So, and on top of it, again, knowing how intentional these programs are in creating addiction, how they're created, that whole, you know, jackpot casino effect of the scrolling, right? And it's sickening that humans are being taken advantage of. And the sad thing, though, too, is that, you know, the children of this generation, a lot of their parents have been sucked right into the same issue. So it's, you know, it's frightening, it's saddening, you know, and I don't want to look at it negatively like that, but it has become a huge issue that we really need to take a stand on and open our eyes to. You know, and some people will say like, oh, well, you know, humans have always been like that. Anytime there's new things, change comes along, there's always resistance, right? And well, I gave the analogy of the automobile. And so sure, yeah, first time in human history, we can now move from point A to point B in this motorized vehicle very quickly. But, and it's a tool, right? It's a tool. But if it's misused, then, you know, drinking behind the wheel or driving too fast or whatever it may be, that can still relate, you know, result in death. Okay. So it's an advancement, sure, progress, but you have to use it carefully. And same with technology, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if it wasn't for technology, we wouldn't be having this conversation today and a podcast and sharing our message. There's a lot of positive elements to it, but we have to use that tool responsibly. And I think that caution has been completely thrown to the wind when it comes to children, their exposure, and also poo-pooing, for lack of a better word, anybody who might say, have you considered that your child's ADHD or you know, insomnia or anxiety might be because of their exposure to screen time or you know, the Wi-Fi in the classroom? Well, that's a ridiculous notion. So it's something that's very close to our hearts because, like I said, we have a young niece and nephew and we don't want to see them go down a bad route, but you can see how much it's part of their lives and it impacts them.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, and you know, a lot of people just don't know about all of this stuff, and that's why Keith, what he does and what we do is so powerful. Mm-hmm. Because just information alone, we won't persuade everyone, but having just that little bit go out to a select few that may, hey, they may be a mid-level executive of a tech firm. They may not want to see this anymore. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll just make one final comment on this area. Mm-hmm. And then I want to move forward and I want to hear about your experience at your recent digital detox. But the last comment I want to make on this issue of tech addiction and children. 10 years ago, I knew a young man who proposed marriage to his fiance in the back of a vehicle that was driving down the road. And the recipient of the text message, his fiance, or to be, was next to him in the vehicle, in the back seat, while somebody else was driving. So what is going on? Wow. And I mean, what a romantic moment, right?
Yep.
And I don't know, guys, it seems like we're taking something precious away from our children and our grandchildren. We're depriving them of their childhoods and their ability to learn to play outside under the sun, maybe even with their shoes off, maybe get a little bit dirty, you know, and enjoy nature and learn to play with their friends. And yeah, how's that all gonna end up? So I want to encourage people, as we talk about these things, as we talk about circadian biology and quantum biology, and we talk about child tech addiction, and let's be honest, even our own tech addiction, the encouragement here as we're moving through this discussion is make a change, instigate a change, say, you know, let's do things a little bit differently and see how that works out. So let's go ahead and finish up by talking a little bit. I want to hear what you guys did in your recent digital detox. What inspired that, and how did that go for you?
Well, it's a great segue too, because it's change, right? You have to make that conscious decision that I want to change what my current circumstances are. And that's essentially what we do. And we've been doing that for the last several years, you know, calling it our digital detox. Usually we go camping in Ontario Provincial Park. That's off-grid, no electricity, no radio generators, that kind of thing. And we let our family know, here's the park's phone number. Yep. In emergency, they can find us, locate us. Yeah. But otherwise, we don't want to be checking anything. And I'll tell you, there were moments where it's like, oh, let me just check the weather, or, you know, you fall back into the trap. But that's part of the whole experience and exercise, right? Mm-hmm. We can't expect to, even us who are aware, to just snap our fingers and be able to flip into a different mode. But this one in particular was very spontaneous. We weren't camping in a tent, but we found a wonderful stone cabin up by South River on Eagle Lake in Ontario. And it was built in the 1930s. There was no TV, a wood burning fireplace, like I said, on the lake. And it was just heaven to be able to step away from our everyday of being on the computers, you know, everything that's connected to the hustle, really, that is programmed into us as well. So that was the element of it. That's what propelled us to go, spontaneity. But Roman, you want to share with some of the things that we did to do our detox?
For sure. And, you know, if I can back up, I think things like this, a lot of it is about letting go of control, right? Because we want to control the weather, right? We want to know what the weather is going to do tomorrow. We want to know how we're going to feel with that text, right? And so for us, it was about just getting there. And I had to be honest, it was hard for me, even though I don't have a cell phone, I'm in front of the computer a lot. So I'm used to a lot of stimulation from researching studies and articles and writing. And I still enjoy that. But going out there, I had nothing. I just had the fire. And then thank God, this lady, our wonderful host, she had lots of books. So I dove right into a science fiction novel. I finished it in 2 days, and I haven't done that since high school. It felt great. Yeah. So that was really good. And all the birds, you know, just waking up, the silence, it was truly golden, because we really appreciated it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just kind of doing nothing, just staring at that fire. Mm-hmm. And again, we love staring at fires because of the infrared light in that fire regenerates our retina. So that's something instinctually we're drawn to. But, you know, it just really made me feel connected to my friends and made me miss my friends in a different way. I can't explain it. I was just very centered in my heart, walking through the woods, thinking of them. And I haven't had that feeling in a very long time. I did some meditation. I forgave a lot of people. And it was just because I took that time for myself. And it wasn't even that long. It was, you know, a few days. Mm-hmm. And so being disconnected from all this technology, from the social media and from the emails, and even the phone that lets us feel connected with other people, ironically, it made me feel even more connected. And that was, I think, my greatest lesson from it all. But yeah, I highly recommend. It's like a mm-hmm. psychological tune-up that each of us need, and physical tune-up.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that's exactly how I felt too. When one of the days when we were meditating, there was a provincial park very close by. Nobody's there. It's shoulder season. Like it was fabulous. We really, truly felt out on our own, which is what we were looking for. And being able to connect with nature or reconnect with nature that way. But the mental clarity that I felt that one day, I remember I'm sitting there and going, my God, my mind feels empty right now. I'm actually able to focus on what I want to focus on, that intention. And that may have been the first time in my life that I truly felt that. And why I want to mention that specifically is when we were returning home, and Keith, this was that Friday when we had you as a guest on our course. We were driving through one of the first major cities. I had to stop in there, pop into a store, and it's mall heaven. And Roman and I thought, okay, well, we'll have some lunch there just quickly in the car. And I turned to Roman and I said, Roman, like I feel so anxious right now, like that the tightness in my chest, everything. And it was out of nowhere. And when you were speaking that night, Keith, to our students, and you touched on anxiety, and it's like, again, the truth that's, you know, staring you in the face. And I said, oh, well, yeah, there we go. That makes sense. But I think that was the first time that I really made that connection, having been away from all of this for a good 6 days and then reconnecting with the alien EMFs, that I felt that physical and emotional anxiety because of that. And Barrie then goes right past Toronto, and you can imagine what kind of an EMF soup that is. So it was like a twofold kind of thing. We with our digital detox, we reconnected with what it feels like to again live how like our ancestors would have. And a little side note, many people would be like, oh my gosh, I don't know what I would do. I mean, that's just way too much time. Like, what would I do with myself? Trust me, that time flows beautifully and it flies. And you're before you know it, you're like, wow, these 6 days are over. How is that possible? And then the other flip side is of bringing you into the awareness of how much we are impacted by those invisible alien EMFs.
Wow. What a great description of a wonderful digital detox, and just listening to how you guys were able to reconnect with one another, and Roman talking about his thoughts and his emotions towards other people who walk on 2 feet on the earth. And, and it's just lovely to hear. I'll just add something briefly. You know, my wife and I, we don't use a lot of tech. We don't think anything of leaving the house without a phone. And we like to spend time with each other. So I'll go with her when she's shopping, and no words are spoken. I just drop her at the door to the market, and then I go get a almond croissant or whatever I'm going to do someplace else. And then I come back when I know she's ready and I drive up to the front of the store and then there she is. And, you know, we just don't, we can sense one another's rhythms. The closer we are in our relationships to people, and much more than that. And I talk a little bit about this topic with Shannon Rowan when I interview her. She's the author of Wi-Fi Refugee. But I think the character of our relationships is changing in a way that's so subtle that most people can't see it, but they're going to be sorry when it's gone. And just for that reason, I just want to encourage people to consider doing what you have so boldly done. And I know you guys had a lot going on between your Substack and the podcast that you produce and all those priorities in life. And yet you staked out a week and you said, nope, we're going to go do this. So yeah, that's absolutely wonderful. And you too just introduced a course that is brand new. And I wonder if you could tell people a little bit about that and then how they can get in touch with your work.
Yeah. Thank you, Keith. Yep. So you can find us at thepowercouple.ca and it's an EMF 101 course, which has over 31 lessons. There's 6 modules. So it's a true overview of all the different EMFs from radio frequency, 5G, dirty electricity, magnetic fields, wiring errors that may be in your home. We include resources there. We're not electricians, but we do have some resources from my studying building biology. And there's also aspects of the psychological, tech addictive nature. We have resources and videos helping people understand what this is doing to children and how they can then liberate their children. Also, we have tips on how to create a sleep sanctuary with resources on that. And we also have 6 weeks of live calls. And we also include one-on-one EMF consultation, private consultation. All the calls are recorded. But yeah, we just had our first semester and it was really a smash. We had so many great people from the US and Canada. We had all kinds of speakers on there and we'll be releasing our second semester probably in late May, early June. And yeah, it's just been such a blessing connecting with others and just helping people with basic things. One lady, a nutritionist, she said, "Wow, I used to work next to my refrigerator as you know, in my kitchen office. Thanks, you know, I didn't know the magnetic field of the refrigerator can go out so far, so I moved my chair." Basic things that, again, it's just little by little these baby steps that we take. Like getting outside, right? I also have information there on how people can use sunlight, precision time sunlight, to build their skin and their eyes back after years of damage. So just so appreciative for the opportunity to talk today and for everybody who's listened. Yeah, thank you so much. And if you're listening to this and you want a promo code, you can also use EMF10, that's EMF, and then 10, T-E-N, spelt out. And yeah, you can head on over to thepowercouple.ca.
Fantastic. Well, it's been a delight talking to you both. Really appreciate the work that you're doing. Thank you very much. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you.
The EMF Remedy Podcast is a project of EMF Remedy, LLC. We'd like to be your trusted guide for achieving a better EMF environment in your home. The contents on this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and are not intended to substitute for the advice provided by your doctor or other healthcare professional. It is not intended to be, nor does it constitute healthcare or medical advice. Opinions of guests on this podcast do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the EMF Remedy podcast.